Please sit down. I think this morning's gospel reading is best described as challenging. And there are a couple of reasons for saying that. First of all, we all know how these parables work, don't we? It starts with a master or somebody in charge and the servants, and it all tends to work out that the master is God, the servant is somebody else. Well, we have the master here described in these words. I knew that you were a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you did not scatter, which doesn't strike me as a very good description of God. So let's knock that one out of the way first, shall we, fairly quickly. The thought is that this parable was originally probably aimed primarily at the Pharisees. And you remember Piers was here talking last week about the Pharisees and their attitude and the law and so on. And I think this is Jesus, sort of, as it were, mocking their attitude, the way that they saw God as a God who is harsh, who judges by strict rules, you know, break the rule and you're gone approach. I think that is where that comes from. Let's put it on one side for a moment. Because I think there's a more challenging one as well. Now, we're all familiar, if we read our newspapers or just keep an eye on what's happening, with a debate that goes on fairly constantly, you know, that in society there's a group at the top who start rich and get even richer, and there's a group at the bottom that start poor and get even poorer, you know. And much political argument goes on about how do you redistribute wealth or not redistribute it, and what can you do for those at the bottom? On the face of it, this parable appears to endorse the idea that the gap gets wider and wider, and this poor guy at the bottom only starts with one bag, gets it taken away from him, and it gets given to the guy with 10. The rich get rich and the poor get poorer. Was Jesus really endorsing that sort of approach? I don't think so. I think that comes because if we do that, we're taking it somewhat out of context. So I want to back off a little bit and look at precisely where Matthew has put this particular story. It's in chapter 25, but in the preceding chapters, he is beginning to talk, apart from having a go at the Pharisees, as he frequently did, he's talking about the coming destruction of Jerusalem. And from there, he moves on to talk about the final judgment, the last days, and the things that will happen. Now, that is a sort of topic that brings us all to a halt very quickly, isn't it? Any thought of judgment. I remember many years ago, and rather more than I care to remember, I suspect, at a readers' conference, we had a former Archbishop of Canterbury addressing us, and it was about four back, I think, before George Carey, before that. And it was about this time of year that we met. And he gave a very good talk, and at the end he was brave enough to take questions. And one of the assembled said, knowing that we were coming up to Advent, and one of the great themes of Advent is judgment, said, we don't hear much about judgment these days. Can you give us any tips on how to sort of deal with it? And he hesitated, but not for long, and he said, no, he says, you don't. We don't hear much, do we? We want to talk about the God of love. We don't like this idea of judgment. He said, all I can say to you is that I think we have to talk about it because Jesus did. Jesus talked about judgment. Not a lot, but it's there quite definitely. And if he talked about it, we can't ignore it. So we have to face up to it. So it's there, the idea of judgment. So where does this particular story this morning fit in? If you want to look sometime, the pattern of it is there. Chapter 24, he's talking about destruction of the temple. Then he goes on to talk about the signs of the end, you know, the sun will be darkened and all that sort of stuff. And then towards the end of chapter 24, he then highlights the fact that we're not to go around sort of looking for it all the time, because nobody knows when it's going to happen, only God. So he's painted this picture in the gospel. Now, Matthew's got a fairly orderly mind, so what he then does is put in three parables, three stories, which sort of fit that theme. The first one is the parable of the 10 virgins being prepared for the wedding. The second one is the one we read this morning, the parable of the bags of gold, or those of us with slightly longer memories will call it the parable of the talents. And then he goes on to talk with the parable of the sheep and the goats. All three stories on a similar theme, related theme. So that's where he's coming from. That's the context. He's not at this point talking about sort of social justice and the rich and the poor and what we do. He's talking about heading towards judgment. And that's what he's talking. That's the theme of it. As I said just now, this one puts it in terms of bags of gold. Those of us who remember it as talents will sort of be wondering, well, where did they get that from? It does actually make sense. In Jesus' time, a talent was a weight of something. And you could have a talent of copper or a talent of silver or a talent of gold, and it got more valuable as it went. But it was precisely that. So it's perfectly fair to translate it in terms of bags of gold. It works. But it does equally apply to the idea of talents, skills, gifts that God has given us. And yours might not be a bag of gold, it might be something else. But it applies to that as well. And that's the aspect of it I want to look at this morning. Now, I think when we look at it in that way, in this story, there's one bit of good news and one warning. The first bit of good news is that we've all got a talent of some sort. We might not be 10 talent people, 5 talent people, or whatever it was at the top of the list, you know. There are those out there who are, I'm sure, who have wonderful skills and go out creating all sorts of opportunities, doing everything. And there are some less. So you have the 5 talent, the 2 talent. And then sitting somewhere at the bottom of the pile is probably where quite a few of us are, with 1 talent, you know, 1 particular skill, 1 gift. Now, we can therefore, I think, sympathise a little bit with this poor guy sat at the bottom, you know. The master had been very fair. Notice very carefully at the beginning. He gave to them each according to his ability. That's the key point. According to his ability. God gives us different levels of skill. We're not all the same. We're not all as clever. We're not, yeah, that's fine. God doesn't condemn us for that. That's not a fault. That's the way we are. Let's accept it. God gives us that gift, that talent, that ability, whatever it is. Now, the danger is that sitting there, we look at the others, you know, the 5 talent ones, the 2 talent ones. And, you know, I'm sorry, life's like this. There's always going to be somebody cleverer than me around, or you, isn't there? Where we look, we can always see somebody better. And we look at them and we think, well, is it really worth me bothering? Can't I just leave it to them? Is it worth it? Whatever effort I make, it's going to be minimal compared to what they can do. Look, I'll just sit here and do nothing. Yeah. Which is what the guy with the one bag did. Off goes the guy with the five bags. And we're not told what he did with it, but he came back with twice with as much again. Even the guy with two bags came back. He doubled it again. And the guy at the bottom looked at all this going on and thought, no, I'll play safe, I'll bury it so it doesn't get lost. At least I can hand it back then, can't I? That's the danger, isn't it? If we don't feel that our one talent is important. But clearly, to God, it is. Because in this story, he says, everybody was given according to their ability. And he gave to those who've got a limited ability, a limited challenge, a limited job, but he still wants it done. And that is the warning that goes with the good news. The good news is we've all got a talent of some sort. However limited, let's recognise it. The warning is we're supposed to use it. This guy was not condemned for only having one talent. He was condemned for not using it. And that's the challenge, isn't it? God has given us those talents, not just for ourselves, but for him, to work for him. You remember, Piers was talking last week about the greatest commandments, love the Lord your God, love your neighbour as yourself. We are to use those talents for the benefit of God and for the benefit of our neighbours. That's what we're here for. Yeah. And even if it's just the one talent, that's still the challenge. If we don't take those opportunities, God says, that's not good. That's not good. And this poor guy comes back with his talent unused and says, I know you can be very hard, so I've brought it back. Here you are. And God, in the story, or the master in the story, was not terribly complimentary. And in the end, he takes it away, and this poor guy is cast out. Sounds harsh, but it's reality, isn't it? You think about it. Think about any skills. If you want to think about particular skills, singers, musicians, artists, painters, whatever, or language skills or something like that. If we have a gift for that, we use it. It grows, it improves, it gets better. The two talents turned into four, the five turned into 10. If we don't use it, what happens? It withers away. It disappears, it shrinks. Maybe the writer of this story was simply reflecting the truth of what actually happens. If we don't use the talents and grow them, they won't stay the same. They'll shrink, they'll disappear, they'll be taken away, which is what that one talent was. So there's the warning for us this morning. The good news, you've got a talent, at least one. Let's all identify what it is. The warning, use it. Because if you don't, you'll lose it.
Thank you, John.